Broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order, and we will start by taking the roll.
Senator Finley.
Finley present by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner's present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Boquist present by audio.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Burdick is present by video. We have one bill on our agenda today, and that is Senate Bill 137, which has a dash two amendment. And so I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 137. Chris. Or Kyle.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, Senate Bill 137, the introduced version is just the annual reconnect bill. But we do have the dash two amendment, and we actually intended for the dash two to be a gut and stuff amendment. And that's in part in that the House has already passed a reconnect bill and is now on the Senate side. So we do have language for that. So it's not needed in Senate Bill 137. But the dash two amendment relates to the Paycheck Protection Program, which this the committee has heard about a few times this session, most recently on the 10th of May in an informational meeting. But I do have some information to set the stage for the public hearing today. There is a document in the meeting materials on OLIS that's the 137-2 overview. So I'll go ahead and share my screen and walk through that briefly, because I know there's a lot of individuals signed up. But again, just to give you some background on what the dash two amendment is doing. So bear with me 1 second here as I get this shared.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, I'll try to get this sized up so everybody can see it as well. Okay. So the dash two amendment, again, this has to do with the Paycheck Protection Program, or the PPP, and specifically the loan forgiveness. So what is the PPP? Just a brief reminder again, this is the PPP program was a program that is administered by the Small Business Administration, the SBA, that's directed to support businesses, nonprofits, and self-employed individuals. And it what the PPP does is, in its first stage, is it's really eligible loans for businesses that are affected by the COVID pandemic. And then these loans are eligible for loan forgiveness. And the key here with on the loan forgiveness, there are constraints on receiving this loan forgiveness related to how the money is spent and keeping employees employed as part of with the business. But the loan forgiveness, the key distinction here is that in terms of the loan forgiveness, in a normal base case scenario for the tax system is that loan forgiveness will be subject to taxation. It would be included in taxable income. In the case of the PPP loans, they are excluded from taxable income. So they are not part of the taxable income for the business entity. And what the Dash 2 amendment does is it would be in many ways, a partial disconnect from that loan forgiveness being excluded from taxable income. So the way that that's done in the Dash 2 amendment is requiring an addition to Oregon taxable income for both the personal income tax and corporate income tax taxpayers for the amount of PPP loan forgiveness received in the tax year, but there is an exemption for the first $100,000 in loan forgiveness. So if a business receives a loan equal to $75,000, there would be no requirement for that business to have an addition to taxable income for any loan forgiveness received because that loan amount was under $100,000. Another example would be if you have a loan of $150,000, the first $100,000 is exempt, so the addition to Oregon taxable income in that case would be the $50,000. And a key thing here is this is the $100,000 exemption is for the loan forgiveness or the loan amount for the entity. So for pass-throughs, think partnerships or S-corps, again, it's based upon that loan amount, not the amount that ends up with the partner or the S-corp shareholder. So if the loan amount exceeds $100,000, then it's only the amount above that that is subject to addition, and then it's based upon the pro rata share of the individual partners or the S-corp shareholders on how they would add that back. But it's not a $100,000 exemption per shareholder or owner, but it's a $100,000 exemption for the business entity. So again, this is the table you see in front of you here. It's just an overview of the PPP loans approved for at the national and here in Oregon. This data comes directly from the SBA. This is just an update of a table that was presented to you by Caitlin Harger of LRO in the May 10th informational hearing. So this is just more recent data updated through May 23rd. Just moving on, and again, I'll try to keep this brief because I know there are a number of people signed up, but in terms of the PPP loans, so the previous table was the national and the Oregon level, and then the data that you have going forward here in the remainder of the slides here is related specifically to Oregon. The data is a little bit older. This is sourced from the SBA, but it's not updated as often as the general table, so the numbers are a little bit smaller here than what you saw on the previous table. But these are the loans that are specific to businesses sourced to Oregon or with an Oregon address. So these are the Oregon PPP loan amounts. And the idea here was just to give a sense of what is the effect of this 100,000 exemption in potential loan forgiveness. And the way that we look at this is, well, let's take a look at the loans that have been approved so far, the amount of those loans, and it gives a good indication of what exempting the first 100,000 in the loan amount could do for that loan forgiveness going forward. So the number of loans we hear, another note on this, nonprofits are excluded from this table as well, as they are unlikely to be affected by the requirements of having that as part of taxable income, as they are a nonprofit. But again, the way this table is set up, you have the loan amount, and you can see of the total 108,000 loans, about 90,000 of them are less than 100,000, the individual loan amount. That's about 83% are under 100,000, so would not trip that 100,000 amount of potential loan forgiveness. In terms of a total amount, that accounts for about 24% of all the loans. So in terms of a numerical count, about 83% of all loans are less than 100,000. In terms of a dollar amount of the amount that the loan actually was, it's about 24% of the total. So about 24% of the total wouldn't be affected, with those amounts above 100,000 potentially affected, but they still get that first 100,000 exempted. And so the net takeaway there is the amount of the loans, and this is for years 2020 and 2021 to date, or about a month ago, we have about $9 billion from Oregon. After putting in place that 100,000 exemption in the loan amount, it would yield about $5 billion in loans remaining that are above that 100,000 threshold. So it cuts it nearly in half of the amount that would likely be potentially exempt from the first 100,000 in loan forgiveness. And one thing to keep in mind here could be a consideration of maybe a policy question is, for those entities that get two loans, would it be, if they receive forgiveness both in the same year, would you sum those two loans together and apply that against the 100,000 threshold? Or would you look at the individual loans specifically for the business? So if a business received two, would they get two exemptions at 100,000 or one flat exemption of 100,000? And that's probably a policy question moving forward. But again, the way that these tables are just set up is just to give you a sense of what would be the effect of that 100,000 exemption. And then the following page has the same setup of a table, but it's just displayed by business sector. So it gives you a sense of, well, what is the effect of, or what are the loan amounts to begin with, and then what's the effect of that 100,000 exemption by the businesses in the NAICS sector. So you can see here, in terms overall, again, it's about a 55% of the loan amount is above 100,000. So it would reduce it by about 45% of the total. So again, we start at $9 billion. There's about $5 billion left potentially being required to be an addition to taxable income. But you can see by industry, and these are the business sector here, by industry, they're fairly close to the 55%, which is the overall average. You see the construction is maybe at 60%. That 60% of that loan amount is above the 100,000. So that's the amount that's potentially subject to the addition requirement. And then at a lower end, you can see it, we're at 46% for real estate rental. But again, across the business sectors, they are fairly close to that 55% overall. There's not one sector, it appears, that is where you're seeing all the loans that are under 100,000 aren't associated with one sector. They are spread throughout. But again, those are the two tables. There is other information contained here in the slides that is basically a display of information that's contained in the table, a visual display of that information. But again, that's to give you a high-level overview of what the PPP program is and what the Dash 2 amendment would do. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. The reason we're considering this, as people know, is not just because these things are being taxed and they're not being taxed and we do want to tax them. It's because of a provision that the federal government has given them the ability to deduct expenses from income that is not taxed. And Kyle, it's my understanding that that we don't have that kind of provision anywhere else in the tax code. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd say that's pretty unique. And we heard testimony from the CPAs near the beginning of the session that I think confirmed that as well, where it is a special case where that would be an exception to the rule, where the rule would be the loan forgiveness would be included as part of income if you're also allowed to have it as a business expense.
Right. And so mechanically, how would that work? I mean, since it's not being taxed in the first place, if you deduct expenses against income that's not being taxed in the first place, how would that work mechanically?
Yeah, so Madam Chair, in terms of the expense, that would work more or less as if it was a normal loan amount. So you receive the loan, the business would just proceed as normal and go ahead and expense those costs, even if they use those loan proceeds for on payroll or other things, utilities or another thing they can use these expenses on. But those are just business expenses. And the real difference then is when that loan becomes loan forgiveness, that's normally when that loan forgiveness amount would then become taxable income. And so in this case, it's really business as usual for the businesses on the expense side of things. And the big change is, well, when they receive this loan forgiveness, absent changes, federal changes or federal law changes that were made, that loan forgiveness would have been required to be included as taxable income. So that's the big deviation going forward.
Right, but if you have this system where you're getting income tax-free and you can deduct expenses against it, could this cause a refund of money because you have a negative tax situation?
Yeah, Madam Chair, that is one of the considerations that we've been working through, is how this would affect individual businesses. Because yes, to your point, is you would have expenses and the income that the business received to pay for those expenses is basically this PPP money that wouldn't show up as, say, like a gross receipt or gross revenue or anything like that. So it's not showing up on the positive side on what you would say is driving maybe a net profit for the business. It's not showing up on that side, but it is showing up as a negative on the expense side. And there was conversation on another way to look at this would be, well, you could limit the expenses then if you're using those expenses with PPP money that was received, that was forgiven. The mechanics of that can be more difficult and the timing of that can be more difficult. We bring out basis questions, which is part of the reason I think the focus or the discussion is focused more on the add back portion, because that's when the loan forgiveness is actually received. And that's when it's no longer works the similar way as a traditional loan, because when you first receive those PPP dollars, it is just a loan at that point. And then it's when you get that loan forgiveness that things then change for the business in terms of not having it included in that taxable income.
And what is our experience so far, or do we know on how many of these loans are going to be turned into forgivens?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm bringing up my spreadsheet here. We do, the SBA is reporting on loan forgiveness so far. We do have, in terms of forgiven amount, it is at the national level, so these are going to be very large national numbers. About half, 53.5% has been forgiven so far. There is a fair amount, about 15% is still under review. But that's part of the process of SBA putting anything, I think it's over $2 million loan amount, into the review bucket automatically, and then they work through that. But there is a fair amount. That leaves about 30% of the loan amount that went out in 2020 that hasn't, the SBA hasn't received, or at least they're not reporting it yet, as amount forgiven. So there is still quite a bit of outstanding amount out there that potentially may not be forgiven. I mean, as we've been watching the numbers on this, we haven't seen a significant slowdown in the forgiveness amount. So that is going up every week that we get reporting on this. So it does seem we are still getting plenty of applications for this forgiveness amount. So that forgiveness amount continues to go up and up each week.
Okay. And as you pointed out, there are two ways to do this. One, if you didn't like it, you know, the so-called double dip, there's really two ways to do it. You could either tax the incoming or not allow deductions against it. So can you just describe what would be involved if we did the other approach and just let the forgiven loans be tax-free, but not allow expenses to be taken against them?
Yes, Madam Chair, so limiting expenses brings up potential timing issues. In terms of forgiveness, you receive, many of the businesses receive, these are loans for tax or in 2020 or 2021. So in an example of a business in 2020, they may have received the loan amount, but they didn't apply to forgiveness. Maybe they just did it recently. The forgiveness could come through in 2021. So in that way, it can be difficult from the business side of things is, do they know if they're going to apply forgiveness? They don't know if they're going to get it. How do they limit the use of those expenses when at the time of that money is received, it is a loan? So in that case, you would normally proceed as if those expenses can be used from the proceeds of the loan. And it's then when it's forgiveness that it would trigger the limitation on those business expenses. So in that case, it could be amended returns have to be filed. And there does bring up, in conversations we've had with some of the CPAs, it does cause some difficulties for some of the owners, especially for the pass-throughs, who may lack basis in some of those questions or issues that could come up of limiting expenses before there's loan forgiveness. So there's a timing aspect of that that can make it more difficult than focusing on the timing of when the forgiven loan amount or when that is authorized.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions from the committee before we go to our witness list? See no questions, so we'll start off with Scott Bruin, and he'll be followed by J.L. Wilson.
All right, well, good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Scott Bruin, and I'm the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a member-led trade association. We have over 1,600 members that employ about 300,000 Oregonians. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. We are strongly, strongly opposed to the Dash 2 amendments of Senate Bill 137. In light of the astonishingly favorable revenue forecast last week, Madam Chair, we were surprised, to say the least, when we saw the Dash 2 amendments posted last night. Surprised because the state is essentially $3 billion ahead of where it thought it would be a year ago, $1 billion ahead of where it was just 3 months ago, and we will finish a month from now with an ending balance in reserves of over $4 billion. That's in addition, of course, to the $2.6 billion we received from the federal government. Simply put, the state coffers are full. They're bulging, in fact, and we've never seen anything like this before. Literally, we've never seen anything like this before. Given the incredible revenue forecast, but also given that Oregon's businesses have already seen a 41% increase in taxes over the last 2 years, we strongly believe that every single new tax or tax increase proposal should now be off the table, including Senate Bill 137-2, the proposed state taxation of forgiven PPP loans. It's important to remember that Congress passed the PPP program in a rare bipartisan fashion because of the desperate financial and economic strain caused by COVID. This wasn't just another policy package. It was a Hail Mary. It was an attempt to stop another Great Depression by keeping Americans employed and by keeping millions of small businesses operating with their noses above water, even if just barely. These loans were not used to augment or replace lost business profits. Instead, the program was specifically designed to help businesses meet payroll. It was Congress's clear intent that PPP benefits not be taxed as income as long as those benefits were used for the intended purposes. These loans were granted and used by businesses, mostly small businesses, to keep people working, even though these businesses were suffering from economic fallout of COVID. This includes fallout caused by state mandated work closures and state mandated constraints, many of which are still in place today. Because of these loans, Madam Chair, tens of thousands of Oregonians were able to keep their jobs. And of course, the state directly benefited from the income taxes paid through those retained jobs. At the same time, the state also avoided the payment of unemployment insurance benefits, which would have been necessary had those jobs been lost. Finally, Madam Chair, Committee, it's important to look at how businesses in Oregon and other states will see this. A business in Oregon that received a forgiven PPP loan in order to keep their doors open is also a business that sees the state does not need any additional revenues. And if revenues are not needed, how can that business then see this measure as anything other than punitive? We wish it were not true, but with our tax, regulatory, and business climate being what it is, businesses are not beating down the door to move to Oregon. Senate Bill 137-2 and the taxation of forgiven PPP loans will not help us overcome this problem. It will exacerbate it. And the bill, in the worst case, may also prove to be another disincentive for companies already in Oregon to stay in Oregon. For these reasons, Madam Chair, Committee, we strongly encourage you to oppose Senate Bill 137-2. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. J.L. Wilson, followed by Scott Rogers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce. I just had a few observations. I would really encourage the committee not to move in the direction of the Dash 2. And I've got a couple of points I want to make. First of all, we're sort of having this academic discussion that this is viewed as a loan. And I can tell you, everyone I know got a PPP loan. Everybody I represent got a PPP loan, and no one viewed it as a loan. Everyone had a pathway to forgiveness in their mind when they applied for this money, because 70% had to be used for payroll and 30% could be used for utilities or rent. But everyone had a pathway to forgiveness in their mind. And they knew from the federal government that that money would not be counted as income. So I think the first part I want to say is this is going to hit small business. And I know the $100,000 number seems high enough that it might not. But remember, we were talking about 2 months of full payroll when nobody knew what was going on. And if you had essentially a handful of employees, 5 or 6 employees, and you paid rent, you would hit that 100,000 pretty quickly. So a lot of small businesses are going to be hit even on a $100,000 threshold. The second thing I would mention is this is going to hit them hard. And the reason I say that is because I know the enormous trepidation that swept through the small business community when Treasury indicated that it would not allow you to deduct the expenses that were paid by the PPP loans. And that was sudden, it was unexpected, and it sent shockwaves through our community. And so the fact that the Congress came back after the fact to clarify was an enormous relief to the small business community. And so I know that this would be something akin to what Treasury was discussing, and I can tell you it will send shockwaves through the small business community if they incur a liability that they were not otherwise expecting. I do agree with Mr. Bruin's testimony that I don't think that this program costs the state anything. If anything, it sustained payrolls and taxable income and kept people off the UI rolls. And so part of the influx of income to the state, I think you'd have to say, is exactly attributable to this program, not in spite of it. And finally, I think one thing that is going to cause a deep and visceral reaction is that most people I know have received their forgiveness already, in fact, received it last year. That means they will be filing amended returns for no other purpose than to go back and pay the state of Oregon for this policy when they know that the state has a lot of money in its coffers. And I just think, I would just encourage you not to go there. It's going to cause a very, very significant, I would say visceral reaction from the small business community. So just a couple of observations on that would encourage you not to pursue the Dash 2 amendment, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Could you comment on if there were a way to not tax the forgiven loans, but also not allow them to deduct expenses against them. Can you comment? Have you thought about that? How the businesses would react to that?
Well, remember when I said a little previous, a few minutes ago, when Treasury indicated that there was not going to be an allowance for those expenses, I mean, the shockwaves, I would probably take you back to March, Madam Chair, in sort of the expectations that were coming out when guidance was fuzzy and everybody was navigating their way through that. And remember, everybody was making their way to their local bank because they thought that this money was going to run out. It was an absolute stampede and everybody had sort of FOMO. I mean, they had the fear of missing out on this. But the guidance we had at the time was that, first of all, it would not be counted as income. And second of all, you could continue to deduct those expenses. That was always the ongoing notion, the ongoing understanding. And so when Treasury pulled away from that and said, well, you cannot, I mean, I cannot tell you the panic that that caused in the small business community, so much so that Congress heard and went back and clarified that after the fact. So obviously I would not be a proponent of disallowing those deductions. I imagine that the state could do that on its own volition if it wanted to.
Okay, thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you. Scott Rogers, followed by Brittany Ruiz.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Chair Burdick and members of the Senate committee, my name is Scott Rogers, Director of Business Advocacy with the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. We represent over 1,200 members across the full spectrum of business and industry. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss our opposition to the Dash 2 Amendment to SB 137, which would tax forgiven PPP loans. This is an important issue for our members and the broader Eugene business community. The CARES Act authorized the creation of the Paycheck Protection Program, which acted as a federal lifeline for both employers and employees to provide a temporary and limited funding to businesses in the forms of loans that our members fully expected to be forgiven for authorized purposes. These funds were never intended to be taxed. Our businesses are still struggling from the detrimental effects of the global pandemic and government-mandated shutdowns. Many are still questioning whether they have enough resources to restart their businesses fully and retain employees over the expected multi-year recovery period. We don't know how long it will take for our local economy to recover from one of the worst social, health, and economic catastrophes of the past 100 years. This is not the time to increase taxes on our businesses, and we feel it inappropriate to tax funds that were meant to help our businesses survive and retain employees. The state of Oregon is awash with federal funds with direct $2.6 billion in direct financial aid from the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan Act. Additionally, the May revenue forecast was incredibly strong, projecting a $2.8 billion positive ending balance. This amounts to $1.1 billion increase from the March revenue forecast and a $2.3 billion increase from the 2019 close of session forecast. With the current budget surpluses, there is no justification for raising taxes on hard-hit businesses recovering from the pandemic and mandated government shutdowns. We thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? See no questions. We'll go to Brittany Ruiz, followed by Sean Cleave. Brittany?
Hi there. I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Perfect. My name is Brittany Ruiz. First of all, hi, Chair. Madam Chair and Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brittany Ruiz, and I am a Yamhill County resident and also a chamber member and small business owner. I am specifically here today because I am concerned about the Dash 2 amendment. Is it Dash 2 or Dash 3? I forget which number it is. We're doing a lot of bills today. And I'm particularly concerned. My husband and I both own businesses in Oregon, and my husband specifically on his side is a minority-owned businesses and small business. Both Hispanic and Black employees own those that business and also have Hispanic, Black, and Asian employees with the company. So I'm concerned about the impacts for small minority-owned businesses, specifically also with regard to the fact that for our businesses, it was 100% gone to payroll. And I'm concerned about the implications that that's going to have when, for example, counties like mine, we're still in the red zone. We're still very limited on what we can and cannot do. So I just ask from from my perspective, that we do not pass this amendment and that we respect the fact that all of these small businesses, from my personal viewpoint, are still struggling, and we should do everything and everything to make it easier on them and not hard. And thank you so much. I'm done.
Thank you very much. Questions? See no questions. So we'll go to Sean Cleave, followed by Laura Edmonds.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave, representing the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. I won't belabor the committee with redundant testimony. I think Mr. Bruin and Mr. Wilson did a great job illustrating the problems with taking up this policy at a certain time. I think that one of the things, though, that is probably on the minds of the committee and some members of the public is that there have been some bad actors that have utilized these loans. However, identifying those bad actors is more of an illustration of a system that works rather than a system that requires legislative attention. As a small business owner myself, unfortunately, I don't have employees, and I was not eligible. But I can tell you, for those expenses that we have outlays as renters, it would have been exceptionally helpful in a time where a job that requires liaising and talking with people and building relationships was literally impossible. Madam Chair, with that, I will end my testimony and be available for any questions the committee might have.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? See no questions. So we'll move to Laura Edmonds, followed by Emily Sewells.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Boquist and all the members of this committee. My name is Laura Edmonds. I'm the CEO of the North Clackamas County Chamber of Commerce, and I'm also on the board of the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce as well. I'd like to go on record as in opposition of this proposed new tax in Senate Bill 137-2. Working with hundreds of businesses throughout Clackamas County, we have the distinct privilege and pleasure of working one-on-one with these business owners and hearing their painful stories of how COVID-19 has impacted their business over the year, how the partial and full closures for some have created such financial hardships that will take them a year, maybe two or longer, to get out of this hole. The PPP loans were intended to help them to keep those employees whole, bringing income in to help them offset the cost for those employees, keeping them off of the UI rolls. Keep in mind, and you've mentioned the taxes and the money and a couple things so far, keep in mind, some of these businesses, while partially or fully closed, were not bringing in income. So when you talk about taxing this PPP loan or a percentage thereof, they were not bringing in income to offset this. So the PPP loans were there as the lost income to help cover the payroll for these employees. So it is critical that we oppose this Dash 2 amendment. These people need to be kept whole. No new taxes. The money needs to be kept in the hands of the business owners while they are recovering. They got to get the traction back under their feet, and they need to, this, I apologize. It's very passionate because I am talking to the businesses out here. And when you're talking to a business owner who's this side of suicide because they've lost so much because of these closures and mandates, it is very emotional for us. And you may not be having these same conversations, but considering a tax at this point in time is just going to add another hardship to these businesses who are trying their best to recover. We need to let them regain the solid ground under their feet, recover. And please, we ask you and we implore you to vote no on the Dash 2 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay, we'll go to Emily Sewells, followed by Aaron Eichenbaum.
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee, for the record, Emily Sewells today representing the Oregon Small Business Association in opposition to the Dash 2 amendment in Senate Bill 137. Over the past year, I've spoken to several Oregon small business owners who shared heartbreaking stories of how the COVID-19 pandemic has devastated their business. One rural business watched their income plummet to zero with the first COVID-19 lockdown. This family had only about $1,000 in their personal savings to pay for both their business and personal expenses. Another small business owner took a second job to keep her business afloat. Another, who can only speak to me in small segments of time, is trying to cover multiple employee positions in his store and struggling to keep the doors open. If they could leave work to testify, Oregon small business owners would tell you that they are scared, that many of them don't know if they will recover, that cutting lifelines or creating new taxes in a time of crisis could put them permanently out of business. The Dash 2 amendment removes critical cash flow from businesses who are struggling the most. The resulting tax increase after record revenue is inconceivable and unnecessary. We need to help small businesses weather the storm. The Dash 2 amendment throws away their life jackets. The Oregon Small Business Association opposes Senate Bill 137 with the Dash 2 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Sills, is there a threshold that would protect your members? Is there an upward limit that we could exempt that would protect your members?
That is not a number that I am prepared to answer at this time, but I am happy to ask these businesses if there is a number.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay, I see no questions. We'll go to Aaron Eichenbaum, followed by Aaron Carmack.
Okay, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, Madam Chair and Senate Committee, my name is Aaron Eichenbaum, and I am a CPA in Hillsborough, Oregon, and have been for, the last 12 years. My comments are going to be much less polished than the rest of your commenters for today, because I'm just getting off of a busy tax season, and I only became aware of this bill a few hours ago. I have served on the Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce as the treasurer of that chamber. And in addition to that, I work with many small businesses and have, you know, since I actually started working in CPA's firms as an intern in college through today. So let me tell you just a little bit about my experience with my business clients and what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a few things. One thing I'm seeing is that, you know, $100,000 may sound like a lot of money to people who have put together this amendment, but it's not. And as other people have spoken about, my clients, whether they be landscaping businesses, in manufacturing, in hospitality, this money that they got to keep their lights on, to keep paying health insurance benefits, even if they weren't making payroll, to keep, you know, making payroll, to not collapse our federal economy, let alone our state economy, these people were using those funds to pay their mortgages, their business loans, in many cases, if they didn't have SBA loans, where they were given a reprieve. They were using these funds as intended. I mean, that was the entire idea, and that was their understanding of what it is, because I've had many, many conversations with this, you know, couple hundred of businesses that I work with. And so they use these funds to pay their bills. And the money's gone. The money's gone. And so what I haven't heard so far today is, and this would be my question for the committee, is where are they going to get the money from to pay these taxes on what we refer to as CPAs as phantom income? It's not cash flow. They've spent it. Some of these people spent it really pretty quickly. I mean, if you think about it, the loan was based on 2.5 months of payroll. And here we are almost a year later from when these first loans came out. Beyond that, for some of the early, you know, adopters who received their loans, you know, last spring. So the money's gone. In addition to that, these are businesses that have also been saddled with the CAT tax. And so they're paying the, you know, commercial activities tax, even if they're losing revenue, even if the business owners are, and I've seen it, putting money into the business out of their own pocket. I have a large contractor excavator client who has 15 employees. His payroll is, you know, substantial. He received close to not quite $100,000, but you just imagine companies like his that are just twice his size, all of a sudden they're in this category. You know, he's paying employees to stay busy doing whatever they could do, even though there weren't jobs. And for his business, there aren't jobs on the horizon because builders have, you know, stopped their building projects due to high cost of materials. So, you know, from my perspective, I think it is the wrong bill at the wrong time. I know it would negatively impact, you know, at least some of my clients, many of them. And that's going to just be echoed throughout the state. So again, that's the question, is where are these people going to get the money from? I mean, they use these funds as intended, they're spent.
So, Thank you. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. We'll move to Aaron Carmack, followed by Peter Kircher.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Aaron Carmack. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm not sure what I can add that hasn't already been said, so I'll be very brief. When the payroll protection program was rushed out, the understanding was this money was for employers to stay afloat and pay their employees. And a key point to that is keep those employees employed, whether they were needed or not, that same number. So next time, changing that understanding would be inappropriate, because next time, and we seem to have a once-in-a-lifetime crisis every decade now, will businesses trust the government and take the assistance? Under the PPP, I spoke to dozens of employers who were very hesitant to do so. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And what was the source of their hesitation?
It was anywhere from, so I spoke to some were afraid that there's a financial person called Gordon Ramsay or Dave Ramsey on there. And he came out with, don't trust the government with loans. It's just going to saddle you. You're not going to be able to get these forgiven. They didn't believe the federal government was going to do that. Others were, what is going to be the standard for this forgiveness? Is it just something that's going to be changing? Because you were taking it on the promise that, oh, don't worry, this is going to be an easy process to get forgiven. Take the money and pay your employees. And it just seemed like a too good to be true type of thing.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? All right, we'll go to Peter Kircher, followed by Bill Perry. Do we have Peter Kircher here? Okay, I'm not seeing Peter Kircher. We'll double back at the end. Bill Perry.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association. I don't want to kind of belabor the points that have come up before, but I do want to kind of add one thing. Obviously, the restaurants have been open and closed and open and closed, and so that we have a lot of employees that haven't yet come back to work. And when you look at what we're looking at the future, and the PPP loans at their core were trying to keep people employed. And as of right now, you look at unemployment insurance, obviously has gone up at least 40%. It looks like hopefully the legislature is going to forgive the experience rating. Our protein costs have gone up significantly. And so in the revenue forecast last week, they talked about 45,000 employees that were potentially going to enter the job market. It looks like you're going to have to do incentives. You're going to have to do, you know, maybe pay higher wages, all these different things to try to get people back to work. So any of these little kind of costs that get tacked on for an industry that's really trying to figure out a way to get people back to work is just going to hinder that growth or make it harder for us to get those people back to work. So, you know, I agree with a lot of the previous speakers, but I think as we look to the future and trying to get people back to work, I do think any of these little expenses that can be avoided so we can help the employers get people back to work would be helpful moving forward. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Perry? I don't see any questions. So we'll go to Anthony Smith, and then we'll try Peter Kircher one last time.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony Smith. I'm the Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, representing thousands of small businesses across the state, many being the smallest of small businesses. But it's actually the 20% of our members with 10 to 24 employees and the 10% of our members with 25 or more employees that I'd like to focus on today. Madam Chair, I appear before you today adamantly opposed to the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 137 because hundreds of NFIB members in all types of industry sectors around the state would see their forgiven PPP loans taxed under this proposal. Most PPP loans were calculated by multiplying your average monthly payroll by 2.5. And I'll just quickly note that the businesses in the accommodation and food services sector were allowed to use a 3.5 multiplier, but only on their second draw. And now I'm no math expert, but I want to quickly illustrate how setting a PPP loan threshold amount of $100,000 would impact small businesses in different parts of the state based on Oregon's three-tiered minimum wage system. Doing some quick math, in rural Oregon, a business could have no more than 21 FTEs before reaching that $100,000 threshold. In the standard rate counties, a business could have no more than 20 FTEs before reaching 100,000. And in the Portland metro area, a business could have no more than 18 FTEs before reaching 100,000. These figures simply define the theoretical numbers, and they don't include other qualifying payroll costs like benefits or factor in those second draws. In reality, we know that the vast majority of businesses pay more than minimum wage, and that's especially true right now when nationally a record high 44% of our members have job openings that they are unable to fill due to a number of factors arising from the pandemic. This is all to say that hundreds of NFIB members and thousands of other Oregon small businesses with fewer than 25 employees would see a tax increase under the Dash 2s. Setting any threshold, let alone a threshold like $100,000, will penalize Oregon businesses based on the number of people they employ. And ironically, the more you pay your employees, the higher the tax penalty. Congress expressly prohibited taxing PPP funds because the whole purpose of the program was to keep as many people as possible on payroll and off unemployment at a time when unemployment claims in every state, including Oregon, were seeing their UI system stressed to the breaking point. Additionally, this influx of federal dollars has already provided the state with a significant revenue boost. I think we heard Kyle say that we're now over $10 billion in PPP funds that's been allocated to Oregon businesses, and with the vast majority of those dollars going directly to payroll. I'll leave it to the experts at LRO to do the math on that, but that it's probably safe to say that that translates to hundreds of millions of dollars in personal income taxes paid to the state from employees whose employers were able to access PPP funding. And this leads me to just my final point, which is that last week's revenue forecast was incredibly strong, projecting a $2.8 billion positive ending balance. This amounts to a $1.1 billion increase from the March revenue forecast and a $2.3 billion increase from the close of session forecast from 2019. The state has also been allocated the $2.6 billion in direct financial aid from the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan Act, in addition to local ARPA funds for local jurisdictions. And given this, there's no budgetary justification for tax increases of any sort, including taxation of forgiven PPP loans. So with that, NFIB urges the committee to oppose the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 137. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. And we'll try again for Peter Kircher, if you're still here. Mr. Kircher, we'd like to hear from you. Okay, I'm still not seeing Mr. Kircher, so that completes our witness list. Doug, I assume we've had nobody else sign up since you closed the list. Okay, all right. Okay, thank you. That completes our public hearing on Senate Bill 137. I will close the public hearing. And just as a matter of information, this was mentioned at the first, the underlying bill is what we affectionately call a vanilla reconnect, which is just a straight up reconnect to federal tax changes. We will not be considering the base bill because that work has been done on the House side. So we will be looking for the House bill to do the basic reconnect. So with that, Chris, do we have anything else we need to consider?
Not for today, Madam Chair, but just for committee members, a reminder about tomorrow.
That's right. Tomorrow we will start our first joint tax credit committee hearing with the House, and that will start at 3:15. And I invite everyone here to attend. All right. That completes our work, so we are adjourned.